recording our meeting. I'm going to call the meeting to order. This is Acting Undersecretary, Office of Policy and Management, Martin Heff. Just a couple of protocol. Please mute all your phones unless you're speaking. That way it creates less background noise for everybody. We greatly appreciate it. Also, on Microsoft Teams, most of you, we can see who it is that is attending. But if you go to the chat mode, if you would please just put in your name and your agency, that will help us, because then we'll have it directly in the feed that you are actually here for attendance purposes for our minutes. So you'll be able to see that a couple of us have started that process already. We are able to see most people on here. I think everybody is called in that I can see. No one's calling in from just a phone number, so I don't see anyone there on that. So we do have our attendance should be good there. First thing I'd like to do is I'd like to welcome Jason Cohen, who's the Director of Operations for Department of Consumer Protection. Jason, do you want to say hello to everybody and kind of what you do at Consumer Protection?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. And sure, I'll be learning a lot from this group because I have no particular expertise in this area. I've kind of gotten linked in because I've been working on our project regarding well drilling reports. So for those who don't know, our agency, Consumer Protection, collects all of the reports. And for years, we've just been scanning them in and uploading them to an FTP site in folders by year and town. But we are working on a new project where it's all going to be in a database that will then be mapped and easily searchable. So it should be a great resource when people are looking to see where wells are and things like that.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Jason, and welcome aboard. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes of June 30th, which were posted on our website. As we are an agency of the state, we do have to go through some of the parliamentary procedure portion of this. So if I could get a motion from somebody to accept the minutes of June 30th, that would be terrific.
Doug Hoskins, motion to accept minutes.
Thank you, Doug. Is there a second? Don't everybody jump at once.
The other Doug seconds that motion.
Thank you, Doug. Is there any discussion on the minutes? I'll assume hearing none. What we'll do is there anyone opposed to the minutes? Because that might be an easier way to speak up.
This is Doug. I did have one correction I got to Bruce earlier in the day. So is Bruce on?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here on the phone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I got the correction from Doug, and I made that, and it's in the final form that will go up on the public meeting website.
Okay, thanks, Bruce.
You're welcome.
Terrific. So then we have the minutes as, you know, corrected. So hearing no opposition, we'll consider those to be approved, and we'll move on. Thank you. Next item is agenda number 3, new data, any changes in conditions since our June 30th meeting, and updated weather forecast. As a reminder, you can go to page 12 of the drought plan, which has our criteria that we are to consider in analyzing the conditions. A reminder that what we've been trying to do before these meetings is to get the reports being asked to be sent out to Bruce and Eric at OPM trying to get them at least a day prior, so that way we can try to compile those and get them out the morning of the meeting so everyone can have these reports to look at ahead of time. They don't have to go out to the entire group, obviously. Get them to Bruce and Eric, they'll compile them into a summary packet and be able to get out prior to the meeting. So that's just kind of a quick reminder. So we'll start off with weather forecast. Doug?
Yes, very quickly. We're expecting about 1 to 3 inches of rain over the next 2 weeks. And most of this looks like it's going to be associated with a tropical disturbance currently moving up the East Coast this afternoon. That disturbance is going to affect us tomorrow evening and probably bring a quick 1 to 3 inches of rain to the area. Looks like more rain in western Connecticut. They'll be closer to the 2 to 3 inch level, and less in eastern Connecticut. They'll be close to the 1 inch level. After that, we go back to the typical summertime pattern of afternoon thunderstorms. Now, right now, the long-range modeling does not have a lot of precipitation in it for the following 10 days. However, the last time we ran this a couple weeks ago, the long-range models also didn't have a lot of precip in there for the diurnal thunderstorms, but we ended up getting a lot of precip from diurnal thunderstorms. So I'm thinking the model's probably underestimating it a little bit this time, because we are pretty wet on the surface, and as long as we stay wet, it's going to prompt the development of afternoon thunderstorms, rather, whenever it gets a little bit warm and humid in the afternoon. So, again, they'll be hit or miss, but I think over the next 2 weeks, we're looking at least a normal rainfall, and depending on the track of the disturbance over the next 48 hours, it could be above normal. So that's the update at this time.
Great. Thanks, Doug. Is Nicole on?
Nicole is the working operations. This is Britt Westergaard from the Albany office. She asked me to attend in her stead.
Correct. Thanks.
Excellent. I see you have the slides up.
Yep. So you can go ahead. Thank you.
Britt, sure. Just let me know when you want the next slide. I'm controlling it from my end. This is Eric.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. Yeah, go ahead. She put together sort of a summary. This is all Nicole's work, so I take no credit. I'm really presenting her excellent work here. So she put together some maps of what June looked like at the end. So you can, I don't know if you can see, yeah. My Teams thing is hiding part of my screen here. Hang on. Right, so generally, June 2020 precipitation below normal, with the exception of, you can kind of see where those thunderstorms hit in the eastern part of the state with the green. So generally the driest portion, north central Connecticut, you know, with 1 to 2 inches for the month, and then higher totals on the eastern portion. If you scroll to the next one, this is the heart of Nicole's excellent work here, is these 1, 2, and 3 month rainfall departures by, excellent, yeah, by county. And I don't think that the dryness goes back beyond 3 months, so I think this should be a sufficient look at them, but you can see it's a variable, some winners and some losers there. But again, you know, north central Connecticut looking the roughest. Do we need to dig more into these, or do we need to?
No, I think that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Carrying on then. I think Nicole did put in here. Yeah. So, the ninth, yeah, in the top 10 driest Junes on record for Hartford-Bradley. So, yeah, right up there. And actually, if you go to the next slide, you'll also see that was exacerbated with above normal temperatures. So this is temperature departure from normal in degrees Fahrenheit. So a solid 1 to 3 with a couple places even warmer than that for the month. So that, I'm not sure how much of that got put in the last meeting that I wasn't able to attend notes, but this is kind of the crux of things, is moving on to the July totals so far. So I think this is through the 7th. And again, you know, there's some hit or miss locations here. So once today rainfall, you can see the sort of spotty nature. And I think that's kind of what Doug was talking about too, with those thunderstorms. You can see some losers in the sort of the brown reddish areas that got less amounts of rain, and then up to a couple locations of like 2 to 3 inches in some of the coastal areas.
Britt, for the record, could you just briefly explain how this data is obtained?
Sure. Well, this one is from this graphic is from the Northeast Dews website, and so this is an amalgamation. This mapping is an amalgamation of rainfall gauges as well as radar estimated rainfall amounts. So it's kind of a blend of the two.
Great, thanks. I think most of us on the call are familiar with this modeling now, but for those who are new and those who may not be familiar, it's helpful to be a little repetitive on that. So thanks for commenting on that.
That's a good point, Eric. And when we were looking at that table that Nicole puts together every month for the rainfall totals by county, that is exclusively using rain gauges. There's no interpolation or radar estimates that are involved in that. That's 100% ground truth. Whereas when you're mapping, you kind of sometimes use the radar to kind of smooth things or determine what's happening kind of between rain gauges. Good point. And then again, so now we go back to the point totals as opposed to the amalgam of rain gauges and radar. So as far as totals so far for the month, you can see there's hit or miss here, hit or miss. So some places above normal for the month already, and some places still way below. So.
Terrific. Thank you.
Yep. I think.
I have some more slides. I don't know if you want to keep going, Brett.
I don't know. The departure, I think that's about, this map is showing about what that table showed. So depending on your flavor of how you best process information, this is also a departure from normal. So yellow is below normal and green is above normal precipitation. This is again for the start of July. And this is actually contoured just rain gauges. There's no radar estimates in this mapping. And then if you go to the next one, if departure from normal isn't your cup of tea, there's also a percent of normal, which gets you a few more contours there. You can start seeing the wide range. And again, this is just rain gauges contoured. This is not, there's no radar data mixed in with this. And I think there's a couple more that, wide variability in terms of the precipitation. And then if you go one more slide, it just shows basically well above normal temperatures. So in the 2 to 4 degree above normal temperatures for the first part of this month so far. And then the rest I think is the forecast, which I think Doug pretty well covered. There are some, if you scroll a few later, there are a couple of slides with sort of the longer term outlook. Once you get past that 10-day forecast that he was talking about, even the I think maybe one or two more slides here. Yep, that was the tropical system that he was mentioning. And this, you know, this changes depending on which model run you look at and what day you're looking at it. So we'll keep going. But the longer term outlook, once we're past this tropical storm potential, we're looking at going back to the above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation regime. So not a lot of good news in the longer term there. And I think if you keep scrolling, I think the 3 to 4 week maybe has a smidge of good news there. On the left is your precipitation, and so where it's green there, that's above normal. But we're still in the, on the right, the temperatures are still also in the above normal. So. And I think there's one more that goes out a few months, and that also doesn't have great news as far as continued above normal temperatures, though the precipitation goes back to equal chances, which means that it's just as likely to be above normal, below normal, or near normal precipitation. So, no good signal there.
That's the end of the slides, Brett. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Brett. Moving on, groundwater and stream flow. John?
Yep, I'm here. Do you want me to share what I have, or do you?
Yeah, John, feel free to share if you're comfortable with that, or I can do it for you. It's totally your
got it right here. I've been doing this. I do this about 6 times a day. let me just pull it up into this. This should be a match with what I sent out in the email. Other than I put flagged it as provisional data on the one that comes to the email. This is a pretty quick update. What we're seeing in our stream gauges is a lot of, with the recent rainfall that brought a lot of our rivers back up into the normal range. Let's see, this was yesterday. I pulled the this is the daily comparison to the day of year. So, we do have some gauges that are already falling back below normal, particularly in the north and the northwest for stream flow. And this just kind of looks at a statewide stream flow index. The links are available if you want to visit any of these links to or add them to things that you regularly look at. Kind of shows that we kind of bumped back up into the normal range, kind of overall statewide. And then, a couple days ago, we've started to kind of dip again below to the below normal already overall. And that's probably because we have a mix of, we might be better to look at the state a little more regionally. This is kind of a statewide look. The interesting thing is this was one of the plots I've been showing recently is our sort of below normal areas for the last 7 days. Basically showing that we're not really considered to be below normal for the last 7 days, which is good, at least for the short term. To get on to groundwater, interestingly enough, we've switched to another month. Our real-time wells are, with the exception of one, are all back up into the normal or above normal range. Now, some of that has to do with the fact, and I'll show with my last graph, why we see that sometimes with these real-time wells, and especially since the statistics are monthly, when you're in the early part of the month, you're often above the sort of typical month value anyway, because there's typically a groundwater recession during the month of July. So we're still early in the month, and we can see that may change. So these did not change color generally as a result of water levels coming back up. But what I was going to show you in my last slide, a couple of our real-time sites where we actually did get a tiny little bump in groundwater recharge. So it was saturated enough in those areas that we got and soil moisture demands were met that we were able to get some water down to the water table. So this is a tiny little bump. I will expect that these things are going to turn over, although maybe we'll get a little bit more of a bump in these same spots from this rain that we get tomorrow. One of the other things, this kind of helps show a little bit on the statistics, because if we're looking at a monthly statistic, and you can kind of see these are sort of the recession lines we see in the summer. This is kind of the line of sort of declining water table. That's basically the storage of groundwater just kind of flowing away to streams on its own. That happens kind of naturally. And I'm famous for saying we don't get much recharge in the summer, which is generally true. So so you have to have the right conditions and enough saturation to actually get something down there. So this would be a case where the amount of recharge definitely was slightly exceeding what was discharging. So we had a rise in the water table. So I hope that helps. And I guess if you want to relate these to any of our criteria, since we've been meeting weekly and we have monthly criteria, the only thing I can really say at this point is if you look back for our next, drought stage, we need 2 out of 3 months below normal. So we can all look at May as being a normal month for streams and groundwater in general. June probably a below normal month. So I think it's still out as to weather we'll see below normal for July, which would, if we were to get below normal at the after the end of July, then we'd be starting to talk about our stage two criteria. So we'll have to see what happens here. I would expect that some of these groundwater levels will stay in the normal range. And that's all I have.
Great. Thank you, John. Moving on, drinking water and reservoirs, Lori and Steve, I don't know who wants to go first. Lori, do you want to start?
Yes, thank you, Martin. This is Lori Matthew, DPH. And so, Steve, are you on? And have you shared the most recent up-to-date information?
Yes, I'm here. I sent the most recent report to Eric this morning.
All right, Eric, do you want to share that?
Sure.
And so one thing, Steve, I don't know if I can't quite recall if we've shared the most recent letter that we sent out to our community public water systems, circular letter 54.
I don't recall. I'd have to look.
I think we probably haven't, but what we need to do is share that. Maybe we could do that now, Steve, if you could find it and share it with Eric. We sent out a pretty extensive, it's not a request, it's a requirement to report information to us on a weekly basis to our community water systems. The letter goes on for a few pages. There's a number of regulatory requirements that we are requiring of these systems to share with us. It includes surface water information as well as groundwater information. So more to come as we start to get that information in for many of our utilities. Obviously, we already received the reservoir capacity information, but for the groundwater piece, we're working hard to add that and also understand demands. There's been an interesting phenomenon going on with 50% increases in demand across the state in many systems, causing some dirty water problems. But again, that's not a source issue. It is more of a system concern, which can cause water quality issues. So we're working on that issue. So Steve, why don't you take through the numbers as to what we have today?
Sorry, my thing was muted. I would say overall things are looking better than they were last week. As you know, there was an increase in five systems that are reporting above normal conditions, and I think part of that is sort of the same phenomenon that John was talking about. You know, we're at the beginning of the month, and some of the data for, you know, doing the calculations is like an average for the whole month. So you know, capacities go down through the month of June usually. But anyway, so we're in a, looks like a much better situation than we were last week. The state average is now above 100%, where last week we had actually dropped below the normal percentage. We do have 10 systems that are below their normal, and one that is about at 88%, which is the Greenwich system. With Aquarion, and they actually hit their first drought stage and are asking for conservation. And they sent out multiple messages to several towns, not just Greenwich, but Stamford, Darien, New Canaan, and several other towns, Westport included. Even though they are not part of the Greenwich system, they do kind of move water up and down the southwest regional pipeline. The one good thing is that several of the systems were trending upward. So from the previous capacity report of last week, they actually had increased their capacity. Their most recent reading. So that's actually a really good thing. So even though things are trending downward for 22 of the system, the 34 systems. To have seven of them going upward is good. If you look at the next chart, this is all their readings, and you can get a general idea of which of the systems in which areas of the state in which they're having some issues. And you can see a lot of these are the western portion of the state. And including several where Norwalk First Taxing District went into their first drought stage. I think it was last week. And then South Norwalk Electric and Water is approaching their trigger. Their triggers change monthly, so we'll see what happens towards the end of July if conditions worsen. But that's basically it. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Steve, Maria from Pura, if you're on, maybe just comment on which towns are seeing those voluntary or mandatory restrictions at this time.
Sure, I have to kind of try to go off the top of my head. So it's going to be the southwest portions with the Aquarion systems, which is Greenwich, Stamford, Newtown, Westport, I want to say New Canaan, and Darien, I believe, all have, Newtown might be voluntary, but the rest of them, I believe, are mandatory restrictions, 20% reduction, which is actually more than their drought plan calls for. Even though it's only Greenwich that has hit their first drought trigger, they're pushing across the whole area conservation. Have to look at the our most recent copy of our conservation measures.
We can share with you the communication that they share with us. We're also on I think it's every other week phone call with Aquarion, where they speak with the towns, and they held that discussion this Monday. So there were quite a few questions from the town of Westport in particular about the restrictions and the communication on the restrictions, because it appeared as though nobody was following the restrictions. So that was an interesting conversation. And that we talked a lot about communication to the customers so that they understood that this was ongoing and not just a one-time event. So.
Great. Thank you, Lori and Steve. Any questions? Okay. Thank you again. Agricultural, Steve Anderson.
Yep, I'm here. I don't know if actually I can try to share here. Everybody see that?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So things are improving, actually, although these are things that look backwards, not forwards. But in the Palmer Drought Index, and what I've done is I put in two columns here looking at where we were as of our last meeting and where we are as of this meeting. And so those areas in yellow there, the Palmer Drought Severity Index, if you look into the data that's linked there, Northwest has gotten a tiny bit better. Central's gotten better as well. And Coastal has also gotten better. So that's good for Palmer Drought Severity. Precipitation needed to end the drought, which is another one I like to look at. It's in the same report. Northwest still quite a bit, but this was as of last week, and we did get some rain after that. I don't know, we'll have to look and see how this looks this week. But the rest of the state got better, substantially better. I went from 3.39 inches in the central part of the state to end the drought, and went to 1.8 this week. And went from 4.89 to 2.21 this week. So that's good. Crop moisture was reporting abnormally dry throughout the state last week. And this week it says normal. The topsoil moisture, which is another one that it was reported as very dry last week. Now it's dry versus very dry. Not a big change in the topsoil, no changes in topsoil moisture compared to a five-year mean, probably just because it's a long-term index, I guess. The veg dry thing also, just note on that particular parameter, that's the vegetative drought response index, and that shows there's a lot of things in there, but the one I kind of pulled out is the percent of Connecticut land area that's shown as either pre-drought, moderate drought, severe, or extreme. As of last week's meeting, that was 24.77%, and it's now improving. It's now 18.8%. The crop progress report, that's also linked there. That report showed last week that topsoil moisture was reported as adequate, 37% adequate and 44% adequate in the subsoil. And those numbers have also come up a little bit. So from the ag data, things appear to be improving, but again, it has to keep going in the right direction. So we'll see how it goes. And the maps are all in here. And you guys can kind of poke through those probably at your leisure. And all this data is linked as well. So that's it.
Thank you very much, Steve. Any questions for Steve?
Oh, all set? Yep.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you again, Steve. Moving on, fire danger, Helene?
Okay. Hold on one second. All right. Just a quick update. You know, it's always hard to give a fire danger prediction ahead of time, like we were trying to do for these reports, especially when we're right near changing a fire danger rating class. So when I turned it in, we were low, and then we started to creep up to moderate and for Wednesday. Today, we've kind of have a split state between low fire danger for Fairfield and New Haven counties and moderate fire danger for the rest of Connecticut. So I would expect that everything's going to go back to low with the rain that's coming. Well, I know it will go back to low with the rain coming in, and it will probably remain at low for multiple days, well into the middle of the week next week. End of report.
Great. Thank you very much. Moving on, U.S. Drought Monitor, Bruce.
Hi, I had to unmute. I've been trying to get the current drought monitor to open on my computer, but I have Teams running on it, which means I'm having trouble getting anything else to run. But I can say that based on what I saw from the final draft of the drought monitor at the end of yesterday, that they were scaling back a little bit on the abnormally dry areas along the coastal area. I believe it was in the southeast and in the middle part in the coastal areas. Otherwise, it may be a slight improvement in the area that was shown as moderate drought, but the net effect is a slight improvement over the previous week.
Great. Thank you, Bruce.
I was late at pulling it up, but I got it, Bruce.
There we go.
I hope I didn't lie.
Great. Thank you. That kind of covers our quantitative criteria. Qualitative data reports. I don't know if we have anything from deep with fisheries or water resources that needs to get covered additionally. Now I'm seeing head shaking now, so okay. Voluntary mandatory conservation requests. Not aware if we've received anything in or anyone have reports on that. Okay, and agricultural impacts, you kind of just went through some of those. Is there any other reports in that area of qualitative items that we should discuss or need to be brought up that we haven't yet?
Yeah, nothing really there. The crop progress reports don't really contain those kinds of reports from individual farmers. I'm pitching to the agency that we try to maybe put something on our website, some avenue for farmers to report directly to us. We should probably broaden it and make it about any weather conditions, but certainly would mention drought for sure, specifically, but we're working on that.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
Martin, this is Doug Hoskins.
Yes, Doug.
Hi, just a question, not really an additional stat, on some of what was provided before the meeting. I thought I saw a stat on how much rain it would take to get out of the drought. And I was doing a phone interview with print media, and they asked me that question, and I had to stumble a little bit and say, go talk to the hydrologists. Who sent that in, and if they could comment a little bit about how that's generated and whether it's useful for us?
I sent that in, Doug. It's Steve Anderson.
Okay.
And, it comes from a NOAA report. It's linked in the PDF document that I sent. If you want to go see where it comes from, I think it's the Climate Center or something. It comes from a NOAA report. We would want to look into that just to make sure it serves that purpose. I kind of have... I don't know if maybe Eric, maybe you can click that link and show them the report that I pulled that from.
Yeah, I thought that was you, Steve, and I didn't see it on your rollout. But
yeah, it's like the third row down there.
Yep, it's right here, Steve.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Bruce. I can say a little about that number. I wouldn't use that number if someone asked how much rain do we need to break a drought. The Palmer Drought Index might not be all that appropriate for here. It was developed out in the Plains states, and that really is just based on their formulas that they use. What is the number that would make everything right again? And when you think about it, if we were to get 5 inches of rain out of this storm that's approaching us in the matter of a few hours, that's not really breaking the drought. It'll fill some reservoirs, but otherwise much of that water will be in Long Island Sound, not really doing much for us on land. Whereas if we got half as much rain across, 3 days of steady rain, that would be the end of the drought. So I don't think that number is very helpful for us.
I kind of agree. That's a kind of a tricky question to ask, considering all the different indices that we look at here. And if I'm looking at, say, groundwater, and as I was saying before, we don't see a lot of recharge typically in the summer. So if we're having a drought that's related to primarily to low groundwater levels, such as in 2016, you could probably wouldn't remedy that situation with almost any amount of rain in the summer, because we need to get the precip during the non-growing season. So, so it's a tough, there's not just one number, I guess, is all.
Yeah, it's a good thing the reporters want to see so they can put it in their paper, I think, but I agree.
I mean, I have thought of trying to create an index where I could figure that out for some of our wells, you know, based on the historical record. What does it take to actually get it back to normal? But a lot of times I'd be saying things like, well, first of all, we'd have to move out of the growing season, and then we need 4 inches of rain to bring this well up into the normal range or something like that, you know, so.
Yeah. Okay. I think I didn't mess up with the reporter then.
Okay.
This is Eric. Could you just specify which reporting company that was, press company?
New Haven Register, perhaps.
Okay.
And I didn't see the results. If anybody saw me quoted, that'd be great. I didn't get anything back.
And that is the question they always ask.
Yeah.
Okay, great. With that, then, we're going to move on to item 4, which is our responsibilities specified in the state drought plan and recommended course of action. This is we are in stage 1, below normal conditions, listed on page 21 of the drought plan. One of the things I'm not sure, I don't believe that Brenda's on from Demis, because we were going to look for an update on municipal water coordinators. Doug, I don't know if you're aware of anything there from the agency side.
Bob Kenny from our agency is on. He'll be coming on
he
in
is.
A second.
I'm sorry.
An update.
Good afternoon, everybody. The update is that each of the 5 Demis regions has sent out a survey to obtain the identification of those municipal water coordinators. At the present time, we've received about 32 towns back, and that's with 2 regions not reporting, simply because one region, they're on vacation right now. They're not on vacation, but I couldn't get an update. And the other one is just waiting for feedback from Council of Government on the list. The only wrinkle is one of the regions has received some, not pushback, but some inquiry as to whether or not this is a duplicative effort to the WOOKS. And so I'm going to be following up with Eric and then with Laurie from DPH. We're going to have a conversation just to iron out that little wrinkle and get that information from that region. But it is moving forward. We are getting a commitment of individuals, and so I expect that over the next several weeks we should be able to get the majority of them in.
Great. And Bob, that region is CCOG?
That's correct. Region 4.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Sorry I missed you on the list there, as I'm trying to find people.
I just try to hide, that's all.
Okay, well, you did well. Okay. So then it brings us to kind of our next steps of, you know, do we remain at stage 1 based upon the information that we have? Do we escalate? Do we de-escalate, you know, on there? So we're looking for, you know, your input back on this. If you feel more comfortable, you can use the chat feature as well if you want to put any response in there, and then I can read those off as well. Or obviously, you can obviously speak as well on that. So looking to kind of get everyone's input, thought process on the information that we've just received of what our next step is at this point.
This is Doug from Demis. From my point of view, I'm comfortable at stage 1 staying there for now because we have competing forces right now. There's a lot of consumption. It's the middle of the summer, so there's a lot of natural consumption too, but there's also a fair amount of rainfall in the forecast, especially in the short term. So I recommend taking a wait-and-see attitude and staying at stage 1 for the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Thanks, Doug. Others?
This is Lori. I agree with Doug. Makes sense. We have to watch demand carefully, and we'll keep track on a weekly basis of our water supplies.
Yes. Yep.
Others? There's no one that's put anything in the chat boxes that I see, so so that's an option there too, just in case. But anyone else have any thoughts on it?
Agriculture would agree.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. My personal feeling as well is to, you know, that we just remain at stage one, continue monitoring, and, you know, as we have been doing, with the forecast coming up at least this weekend. So I'm in agreement there as well. So anyone else have any thoughts? Okay. So we'll look at next step as being staying at, you know, stage one as of right now and continue monitoring. So moving on, additional items for next meeting schedule. I do want to call just briefly before we talk about the next meeting. Eric and Bruce, if one of you want to talk about, I know you attended our neighboring states drought group. If you want to just kind of touch base on that, just as some interesting feedback on that.
Sure. Yeah. This is Eric Lindquist. So yesterday, Massachusetts held a meeting of their drought management task force. And we've been trying, Bruce and I are trying to develop better coordination with our colleagues over in Massachusetts and Rhode Island to get a sense of how those states operate, how they implement their plans, their procedures, and so forth, to compare to how we do. And yesterday was the first time I don't think anyone from Connecticut had ever attended a meeting of the Massachusetts Task Force, and it was really enlightening the way they operate, their procedures. So I'm going to continue to talk with Vandana Rao, is the woman in the Water Resources agency there that runs the Drought Task Force, and we'll do the same with Rhode Island. There's a woman there on the Water Resources Board in Rhode Island that Bruce and I have good contact with, and we'll probably try to attend remote meetings of those groups as well. And that speaks to another benefit of having these meetings remotely, is that it's easier for colleagues in other regions, other neighboring states, to kind of tune in and learn what other states are doing. And so we're trying to take advantage of this time period to be able to do that. So I'll probably be summarizing my findings from attending these meetings, and at some point we can have a discussion, but that's where we're headed.
Great. Thank you, Eric, for that. Looking at for next meeting schedule, I would propose that we look at next week, you know, a week from today, pretty much, maybe possibly around the same time or so, but towards the end of, you know, next week, to regroup again and review our items and updated status. Anyone have any other items or thoughts that they need to discuss or bring up? Okay. If not, if we could take a motion to adjourn at 3:21 p.m. would be wonderful.
Motion to adjourn.
And is there a second?
Second.
Hold on, wait. Folks,
sure.
Sorry, Martin, I just realized we missed two folks on the phone. We didn't identify them. Could we ask them to identify themselves?
Sure. I see 206-214-6453. I'm not sure who that is.
Whoever they are, they're muted, so I don't know if they tried to speak.
Yeah, and if it's the 959 number, Eric, it's me.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm logged in twice because the state computer doesn't allow me to do that. So, but if the person that's on the phone, if they can at least put in the chat who they are so we can identify for the record, that would be great. Thank you. With that, we have a motion and a second to adjourn. Since I don't allow any discussion on adjournment, you know, all in favor, aye, welcome, terrific. Thank you all very much. We will be in touch.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye, everyone.